This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. We now return to Cordishi and Coit.
Welcome back to Cordishi and Coit on Sports Radio 103.7 FM WEEI. And right now it gives us great pleasure to welcome to the show. She pretty much does it all. She's an author. Mm-hmm. She's a writer. She works for ESPN and, of course, is a frequent guest on Around the Horn as well. We are happy to be joined right now by Jackie McMullen. Jackie, good morning. How are you?
What do you say, guys? How are we doing?
Good.
Doing well.
Jackie, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Well, I guess timing is everything, and to have you on the morning after, unfortunately, what happened to Kemba Walker last night. I guess, have you heard anything more about it? The good news is it sounds like, and I say good news in quotations, is he's only suffering from concussion symptoms and nothing more serious than that.
Right, and he has been released from the hospital, which is also another good sign. But as everyone knows, I'm sure, concussion symptoms can be tricky, and they can be lengthy. So the next step going forward will be see how quickly he can get out of concussion protocol. I wouldn't expect to see Kemba Walker for a minimum of a week and maybe longer. They're going to obviously be very, very careful with him. But, you know, that's a scary scene. Whenever someone's put on a stretcher like that and you have to immobilize him, anytime you're talking about a neck or a head injury, it's hard not to fear the worst. My daughter actually lives in Denver, was at the game last night.
Wow.
And said that the arena was just dead quiet. And when they played the replay on the screen, that everybody actually gasped. So it was a very scary moment.
Yeah, but the great thing was, as Scott pointed out, you know, it's encouraging signs this morning, which is good.
Yeah.
And you know, to see the team to respond the way they did, I mean, it's so difficult when something like that happens,
right,
for a team to go
and
back
it was
out there.
A freak accident too,
right? You know,
freak
exactly.
Accident involving, this is a teammate. So
yeah.
You know, this is it's so funny to me. This team is back to what everybody loved the year before. They're the plucky underdog that never quits, and that almost seems a little trite because I think they're better than that. When everybody's healthy. Before Gordon Hayward went out with his broken hand, the Celtics were the only team in the NBA that were in the top five in terms of offensive rating and defensive rating. In fact, when Gordon went out, they were the number one offensive rated team in the league. Now, you knew that wouldn't be sustainable once Gordon went out because he's such a facilitator. I think his assist percentage rate was higher even than Kemba Walker's. I mean, he was really getting guys involved. So you knew that wouldn't be sustainable without him. And of course, that hasn't been. I think they're out of the top 10 now offensively, maybe down around 12 or 13. So all of these things are to be expected when you're shorthanded. But I never in a million years thought they could play as well as they have defensively with Al Horford and Aaron Baines gone. It's just been amazing what they've been able to do.
Yeah,
amazing.
That's a great point, mm-hmm. Jackie. And I think you brought it up earlier, Nick. You know, I think the performance of Tice, I think has really
awesome.
Been better than we expected down
yeah.
low, right?
Right, so it's a three-headed monster. Tice gives you one thing. Robert Williams gives you legs and jump, and, you know, he's still very unpolished. It makes a lot, sometimes he's out there and you're like, oh, gosh, what's he going to do now? He makes a lot of Shaq-to-fool mistakes. I don't know if Shaq's on to him yet, but he will be soon, I think. And you know, Enes Kanter is a good offensive center, but right now that's just not how this team is built, so I think you're going to see him to continue to come off the bench because they've had trouble scoring off the bench, and Kanter helps them with that.
So
Tice in the starting lineup makes sense.
So
yeah.
When Hayward went down, obviously a guy that needed to step up and fill in part of that void was Marcus Smart, and now even more so now with Kemba Walker down for, you know, the foreseeable future. Does this also open up more minutes for Wanamaker and Edwards? Is that, you think that's got to be the plan?
Well, Wanamaker's played really well. You know, he struggles at times on the defensive end. But offensively, you know, when he was coming off the bench, and he might have to step into the starting lineup, I would guess that's what they're going to do. You know, he's been scoring. He's been shooting the ball well. Edwards is such a streaky shooter. I'm not sure how many minutes you know, I don't know if he becomes a 30-minute game guy. I think the worry I have with Marcus Smart is when Marcus Smart was your starter or your first guy off the bench, and he's your number five guy offensively, that's the perfect role for him because they start moving the ball. And if he gets an open three, I think he's proven he can hit it. But when you start asking him to be Kemba Walker or Gordon Hayward or Jaylen Brown and score at that level and score at that volume, I think that's a problem. He's really, since Gordon Hayward's gone down, if you look at his three-point shooting percentage, it's just gone through the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a little dangerous to ask Marcus Smart to become one of your primary offensive options. He's one of the best defensive players in the league. You could make an argument right now that he's on par to be the defensive player of the year. He's guarding centers and power forwards and doing it in a very effective manner. But to start asking him to be a top frontline scorer, I think that's problematic for the team, and I think it's problematic for Marcus, too.
Well, and I'm sure that's a conversation Brad Stevens has already had with him. I watched that Clippers game, and toward the end of that Clippers game, you know, Doc Rivers is looking and saying, like, oh, Marcus Smart's over on the arc. Just go ahead, leave him open. Go ahead, because he gets tempted to shoot
it.
The ball.
I mean,
yeah.
He goes through these really horrible shooting slumps, and he's worked really hard at it, so I don't want to minimize how hard he's worked. And, you know,
sure,
he shot 36% from the three-point line last year. That's very decent. That's really very good. And I know he works really hard at it, but he's just so valuable to them in many, many other ways. And it's just, I think it's a lot to ask for him to be a 15-point-a-game scorer. It's not what he is.
A sure. perfect example of his value to the team was the way he played against Milwaukee and Giannis. He got into Giannis's perfect. Head in that game when awesome. They came
and
back
right,
to beat the Bucks.
Before that, Kevin Love in the post, you know, against the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah.
So he even Kawhi, he does a good job on Kawhi. I mean, you can put him on anybody, and he takes that as his, you know, his. He's not going to stop till he does that job, and he's the heart and soul of that team. He has been for a long time, and what's nice about it is when he was young, all that emotion was his biggest strength, but also his biggest weakness. It seems like a million years ago now. Remember, he made contact with referees. He did a lot of crazy things, and he's grown up so much. It's been really fun to watch him mature as both a person and a player, and to become, you know, he's the captain. I mean, I don't know if he has a C on his chest. I don't think they do that anymore, but he is clearly the captain and the leader of that team. There's just no doubt about it.
Yeah, totally agree. We're talking with Jackie McMullen of ESPN, and speaking of growing up, something that we talk about, you know, offense and defense, and on the defensive side, it really feels like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, part of, you know, the improvements on defense, it seems like have come from those two guys and their commitment, you know, at least a little bit more this year on that end of the floor. Just what have you seen with those two guys in their growth this year and sort of taking the reins here on this team?
Right, and I would say particularly Tatum. Tatum's really stepped up his defense. In fact, I don't know the last two games because I haven't seen the current statistics, but I know up before that, with Jason Tatum on the floor, teams were shooting 41%. When he went off the floor, that went up to 46%.
Wow.
So that's really saying something about a player that we think of primarily as, you know, a top 10 scorer, like a professional scorer, like a Paul Pierce kind of scorer, right?
Yep.
So that's a huge jump for Tatum, and I give him a lot of credit. He strengthened his upper body. I think he's being smart about rotations. And Jaylen Brown, to me, was always a good defender. He had a slow start last year, but what got lost in the second half of the season because they were so dysfunctional and so many things went wrong, he was a really high-level defensive player over the last half of last season. But just nobody noticed because there were so many other things that were going wrong. So he has a chance to be, you know, a really elite defender, and I think you're seeing that. But the thing that surprised me is a couple of things, too. The way, number one, Tice and Robert Williams defending the rim. You know, Tice has proven to be a bit of a shot blocker.
Yeah. Yep.
And we know that Robert Williams, that's about all he does. Sometimes you want to tell him, you don't have to block every shot. But that was something that surprised me, how well they've defended the rim. And then I've been really impressed with how they were defending the three-point line. I wasn't sure. Kemba Walker didn't come in with a great defensive reputation. He wasn't, you know, he was an upgrade over Kyrie, probably, but Kyrie certainly wasn't a great defender. But I think Kemba Walker really bought into the way they defend on the three-point line, the way they they rotate and hedge, and I've been really impressed with how they've defended the perimeter too.
So, Jackie, going back to what you said earlier about this team, you know, being that plucky team that we all appreciate as Celtic fans, and really that's maybe a little bit of a knock on them because they have the potential to be so much better than that when healthy. I want to go back to last year, and while they had Kyrie Irving, where did Danny Ainge make the mistake from this standpoint? Did he think that Kyrie Irving, that they could be a good team with Kyrie Irving being the ball dominant guard that he is, and the other guys just being kind of bit players, bit actors around him? Or did he make the mistake by not impressing on Kyrie, hey, if we're going to maximize the talent of this team, you need to do a better job of sharing the ball and being less of a ball dominant guard?
Well, see, I will not call it a mistake for the Celtics to trade for Kyrie Irving.
And I agree,
yeah.
Because I would have done that, and I think everybody... I didn't hear one person on this earth that say they wouldn't do that.
100 so, times out of 100, you do
right.
that. Right,
so I just think he is such an incredible talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. He has the best handle in the game, and he's a clutch player. And listen, it didn't fit, and that's... Was it Kyrie's fault? Oh, a lot of it was Kyrie's fault. But he wasn't the only one to blame, and I've said this over and over. Those other guys got ideas in their head because they pushed a, you know, to me, mediocre Cleveland team to the limit in a conference finals, but it had LeBron, so that's why. And they got the ideas that, wow, we're elite players now. Well, no, not really. And so they had to come back and play a lesser role, and they chafed at that. And, you know, we've talked about the idea of force-feeding Gordon Hayward back into the lineup when he wasn't ready, and Brad's taken ownership of that. So it's not as simple as just saying, well, Kyrie, you know, dominated the ball and messed up this team. Those things happened. But, you know, Kyrie tried to be a leader in the early going. He didn't do it well, but he tried. And he failed spectacularly at it, but he had help. And so to point just at him doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, I will say this. If you look at what's going on now, the way the Celtics move the ball, share the ball, Gordon Hayward looks like a new person to me, and I think he was walking on eggshells with Kyrie.
Sure.
And that's on Gordon a little bit, isn't it, too? Because he's a pro. He's been around a long time.
Right.
Now, so you look at what's going on with the Nets now. He's dominating that ball. That team, they were the plucky underdog, and now they're under 500. And actually, they've won two in a row while Kyrie is sidelined. I mean, stop me when this sounds familiar.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you're so right.
Yeah.
You're so right. It's just
that's
the way
he's... Now, I will say this.
Yes.
If I were Sean Marks, I would have done exactly what he did. I would have signed Kyrie and Kevin Durant and DeAndre Jordan. They came as a package. It was all or nothing.
Oh, of course.
And I do believe that when Kevin Durant comes back, and I don't expect he will till next year, although he told me when I was down there recently that he'd like to come back this year, but I don't expect that to happen at all. I think Kevin Durant will be the headliner, and Kyrie will be his willing sidekick, and you know it'll test their friendship somewhat, but I think it'll work, and I think they'll be one of the favorites in the East when that happens.
Sure. And that makes sense, you know, when you have a guy that's superior and, you know, that kind of talent.
I mean, Kevin Durant's just a, you know, now who knows, he's a generational talent. Now who knows if he comes back from that injury, that's a really tough injury and it's very difficult to come back from that.
Sure.
But, you know, he was rehabbing while I was there. I would never bet against Kevin Durant.
Just going off of the Kyrie point too, Jackie, you wrote recently just how different the vibe is around the Celtics with Kyrie out and Kemba in. And just...
Right.
What have you seen so far being around the team this year and inserting Kemba? What effect has he and his personality had on this team in the positive
he's
way?
He's just so positive.
Yeah.
He really is. You know, when Jason Tatum is going 1-for-18 from the floor, he's still clapping and telling him, keep shooting, brother, keep shooting, and means it. You know, that's the difference, right? He actually means it. He is not concerned about stats. This is a guy that has spent most his entire career in Charlotte, and they haven't won anything. So he just wants to win. He wants to go to the playoffs and know what that feels like. He wants to try to be in a position to be in an Eastern Conference Finals. He's never had that opportunity. So he's all in for whatever it takes to make the team win, whether that means he gets less shots, which he is getting less shots, but he doesn't care. And he's so positive. And boy, he's a joy to be around. And we heard that before he came, but until you actually experience it, you just can't believe, you know, what a sunny person to add to your mix. No question about it.
Jackie, last question from me. How fascinating does this NBA season have a chance to be, given that there's no clear-cut, dominant, win-healthy Golden State team that you expect to be in the NBA Finals? You've got all these dynamic duos spread out throughout the league. Or is that a bad thing? Sometimes, you know, having a dynasty and a team at the top to shoot for is a good thing for a professional sports league. How do you
I never minded the whole Golden State thing, but I was in the minority there. I think most people like more teams to have a chance, and there certainly are plenty. The Lakers look. I've seen them live a couple times. They're just fantastic. And you know, we were talking before about Boston being the only team earlier in the year that was in the top five offensively and defensively. Guess who the only team is now? It's the Lakers.
Yeah.
And they're just there. You know, I never thought Dwight Howard would buy in the way he would buy in. LeBron is just playing out of his mind. So they're a very exciting team. The Clippers are everybody's favorite to win it all. But you know, you're going to see them move up in the defensive rankings now that Paul George is healthy. Kawhi had a game winner the other night. Houston's won eight in a row. They've got their house in order defensively now. So, I mean, Harden is the most incredible scorer since Wilt Chamberlain. So those are the three teams in the West. And I haven't even mentioned the Utah Jazz, who are the best defensive team in the league. But they're having a little bit of trouble. They're relying a little too much on mid-range jump shots. I think that's going to hurt them. In the East, Milwaukee, you've got Giannis. He's incredible. I think they miss Brogdon a lot. If I were them, I would have signed Brogdon and let Eric Bledsoe go. They made a decision to do something else. We'll see how that plays out. And then Philly, you know, which had all sorts of dysfunction on and off last season, they're the good ship lollipop right now. They're all in love with each other. I don't think it's a coincidence that Al Horford's there, because he's a wonderful positive influence in the locker room. And they've really, you know, I don't think we've even seen how good they can be. I think they've stumbled a little bit early, but they were my pick preseason to come out of the East, Philly.
And that'll be a difficult matchup for the Celtics because of their presence
down low.
Almost
impossible. Yeah. I mean, at some point, the Celtics' lack of size is going to come back to haunt them.
Right, Jackie. Great stuff. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too.
You too. Happy Thanksgiving, Jackie.
Yes, best to you all, too. Enjoy your families. Thanks.
Jackie McMullen from ESPN with us, wrapping it up here on a Saturday morning on Sports Radio 103.7 FM, WEEI. Thank you to Joe Passarelli. Great job, Joe, on the other side of the glass, and Laura Minicucci for putting this thing together throughout the course of the week. Don't touch that dial. Mark and Kitchen coming your way, 9 to 11 right here on 103.7 FM, WEEI. For Nick Hoyt, my name is Scott Cordishi. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. This is Cordishi and Coit.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.